gentlemen, we have two apologies from the minister and the deputy minister. We also have an apology from the whip of the committee. We also have an apology from Ms. Masimogo, who's leaving early. I have been summoned to the office of the speaker at half past 11. We have to make an arrangement so that we can proceed with the work of this committee smoothly. We cannot sacrifice the quality of the work that we do because Ms. Masimogo is not here, the minister is not here, the deputy minister is not here. Those of us who are remaining, we should do the right. Can I greet you all in the name of rural development and land reform? We have today the last leg of the annual report of the Department of the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. We will recall we got two installments. We received the Commission's report. We would then receive the annual report of the department. And today we're getting the last leg in volume of transport report, annual report. The DG is here with the delegation to make the presentation. We will do that as soon as we can, DG, so that we can do the best of the work in the morning part. When other members leave, we should have finished. Thank you very much, DG. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair. May I just very quickly invite the two members of the board present to introduce themselves, and the CFO of the Ngonyama Transport, who is going to do the presentation, and there's another official, Belinda Ensign, who's going to be joining us shortly.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. I'm Pastor Zita. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson and committee members. Honorable committee members, my name is Amin Mia. I'm the CFO of the Ngonyama Trust Board. My colleague, Ms. Belinda Benson, was supposed to do the first part of this presentation, but she'll be joining us a bit later, but I'll continue. Chairperson, we prepared slides. You can see it on the screen there. I'm sure members have got the slide with them. I'm on page 2 of the slides, which shows the objective of Ngonyama Trust Board. The objective of Ngonyama Trust Board is optimal land usage for the material benefits and social well-being of the communities living on Ngonyama Trust land. Our vision is to improve the quality of life of the people living on Ngonyama Trust land by ensuring that land usage is to their benefit and in accordance with the laws of the land. Our mission is to provide the best possible land management systems to communities who live on Ngonyama Trust land. The legislative framework, the Ngonyama Trust Act, the Ngonyama Trust was formed initially in terms of the Ngonyama Trust Act, 1994, and was further amended in 1997. The Ngonyama Trust Board is a scheduled public entity in terms of the PFMA. This map, the colors, the green here, reflects the land owned by Ngonyama Trust Board. The land owned by the board is approximately 2.8 million hectares. The number of titles within the title deeds that we we have presently is 1,491. The population of Ingonyama Trust estimated was 4.5 million people. There are approximately 236 traditional councils within Ingonyama Trust. Then the next slide shows us the traditional communities and their land distribution in terms of the district municipalities. The core functions of ITB on slide number 6. The core business of ITB is real estate and land management. The board grants land rights and it uses various 10-year instruments for this purpose. Rights are granted subject to the approval of the effective traditional council. It means for the concept of the traditional council, land rights are granted. These include leases, servitude rights, surface mining rights, residential lease rights, commercial lease rights, state domestic indigenous titles, land availability agreements. The board members of the Ingonyama Trust currently, His Majesty the King is the sole trustee of the board, and there are 8 board members. Currently there are no vacant positions on the board. Our acting chairperson is Honorable Justice S.J. Ingwenya. 2 board members are here today, Pastor Zita and Nkosi K.W. Mutala. The next slide shows us the attendance of board members. You notice that Nkosi Mutala was appointed late last year. Therefore, you will see that we only attended 2 meetings. The Ingonyama Trust Board has an audit committee as a subcommittee of the board. Chairperson of the board is Professor B. Stobie. The audit committee has a charter, and the internal audit function is outsourced. In terms of employment equity, the next slide refers to the employment equity, and you will see that in terms of the different race groups, that the number of males is 16 as of 31st March 2011, the number of females is 14, the total staff employed is 30. Chairman, with your permission, can I ask the lady to continue with the presentation?
Honorable Chairperson, members of committee, my extreme apologies for being late. I do apologize to the committee and for the lack of cohesiveness. My apologies. As my colleague is here, was referring, we're going to the employment equity in respect of the Ingonyama Trust Board. We do note that at this current stage, we do not have persons with disabilities within our organisation, so we have not reflected that at this stage, but it is definitely something that we will take under advice in terms of our approach to future employment opportunities and vacancies. Of the board and the staff during the secretariat during the course of the year is indicated in the number of applications received and processed during the year. A land tenure application ultimately is to be converted to a lease agreement or a land tenure rights instrument which provides for the income to board. In the case of the financial year 2010-2011, we received 1,220 land tenure applications, of which 449 were approved by the board. It is a requirement of our processes that board approval be granted for each and every application that is considered before an agreement is concluded. And as a result, there are 211 agreements were signed. The next slide gives an average sort of break to receive applications. From this process, one can determine areas that could possibly be hotspots, areas that would require focus, areas where we know that there's some sort of opportunity or some sort of real estate investment is likely to occur. If it pleases the committee, I will now move on to the performance, the annual performance plan and the targets. Performance indicators, the number of land tenure records inputted. The target for the year was 500. In this regard, the department achieved a total of 1,135 records. Consolidation of title deeds. The consolidation of title deeds was not undertaken during this financial year. The consolidation of the title deeds was no longer considered a priority in so far as there was no material gain to be achieved from this process at this time. However, during this course, 45 additional portions of land were transferred to the department, to the Ingwenyama Trust Board from the department. The number of KwaZulu R293 towns transferred to the local authority. At this juncture, there is only one R293 transfer outstanding. That is the township of Mpumalanga in the Etiquette region. It is of concern the magnitude of the issues surrounding the Mpumalanga township require perhaps a different approach in order to resolve the issue to effect this mandate. Number of previously transferred towns revisited. This is the process of going back and re-examining and ensuring that the process is complete, that all the ends, the tying up is done once the process is complete, and only two townships were revisited of the targeted three. The number of transfers of land for state domestic purposes. The transfer of state domestic purposes is laid out in our legislation. It is a vesting process of the land to the correct organ of state. This program requires the interaction of a variety of different role players, and at this juncture, none of the state domestic transfers have been achieved. There are a number of reasons and excuses behind this. However, we do believe that this is a program that needs to be reconsidered and new, fresh ideology brought to the principle of how we deal with the allocation of that land to the correct state department. The percentage of applications processed for the allocation of land for housing. Currently, we receive 28 applications from the department for funding, of which 7 resulted in land being made available to the department for the housing construction in terms of rural housing projects. Whilst 28 and 7 do not seem high numbers, this related to 6,200 units during that financial year. The number of tenure applications received and submitted to the board. A total of 1,177 applications were received, 450 were evaluated and submitted to the board for consideration, and 250 were approved. The variation to a large degree is a result of incomplete documentation that may have been received as part of the application and scrutiny process, the due diligence resulting from the application whereby it may be shown that the particular application is not on land owned by the Ingwenyama Trust Board, and then there have been, and we will be honest enough to admit, there have been capacity issues in the fact that there is a requirement of human capital to effect these transactions. I'm having a bad day, as you can see. Hence, their percentages is not during that year. The number of settlements formalized through cooperation agreements. The target during the financial year was three. Two land audits were completed and agreements concluded. Those were for the towns known as Chapini and the town of Mangudi. A process to conduct the same at Mumbai's wine was undertaken, but that is not complete, so therefore cannot be recorded as a completed activity for the purposes of reporting. The garden projects, which relate to the agricultural portfolio, to the provision of sustainable communities and to provide for the food security for communities. The garden projects were supported in the following projects: Ntanzi Traditional Community, the Teni Traditional Community, and the Sutu Traditional Community. There was a requirement to achieve five of these community gardens, and the department was working closely with other stakeholders, for example, the agriculture department, to ensure that we drive forward with this process. The number of workshops and roadshows conducted. The purpose of the workshops and roadshows was to promote the message of the Ingram Nama Trust Board, to create the sense of presence of the Ingram Nama Trust Board in areas that it might not previously be exposed to all aspects of our business. And in this regard, selected meetings were held with municipalities, especially around the issue of the PDA and the effect of the PDA on the development of land, and with certain traditional leaders, the traditional leaders in the local houses. During the course of that of the financial year under consideration, the legislation that had the greatest impact on the board was the Royalty Act, and the relation, and that was the particular piece of legislation that was reported on and investigated by the unit. There is currently a review. The Ingram Nama Trust Board was created by Act of Parliament or Act of Legislation in 1994. The Act was amended in 1997. From that period to date, there has been no review of that legislation, and as a result, certain components of it may be considered to be no longer a force in effect, or may be considered as a result of underlying legislation having been amended during the course of the decade. It is our contention, it is our submission, that we are in the process of re-evaluating that situation for a proposed amendment to the legislation. The percentage of applications received for communities in order to enlighten committee, as committee is aware, we hold land, we hold money for the benefit of the community, which is released through to the community in the form of projects that are accompanied by a business plan. During the course of the financial year, of the applications received for funding for projects for communities, 98.55% of funding was released for the project applied for. Insofar as the board's ancillary consideration of job creation, it was negotiating for the appointment of inspectors to undertake certain functions within the traditional areas, and this was not achieved during that year for the inspectors and for teams to be appointed. That was not achieved during the year. It is at this juncture that I would need to record that perhaps certain targets were optimistic and that the processes involved therein perhaps required a bit more thought and a bit more implications thereof needed to be mapped out in a more sustainable way in order to achieve that target. We acknowledge possibly the flaw in that particular item. The number of land administration committees established and trained. The land administration committee refers specifically to areas where there is no traditional council. The traditional council would be the first call where one is looking to allocate land or to grant rights to land. In certain instances, there are no traditional councils. In this case, there is a process involving all the stakeholders to achieve a process whereby the municipality, the local community, and the Ingram Nama Trust Board formulate a process in which land allocation committees undertake their function in order to achieve all good orderly planning and settlement of the land and the best and optimal use of the land. this point, I will hand over the reporting on the financial status to our CFO. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. As of 31st of March 2011, there were 5 staff members in the finance section of the Memorial Trust, and there were no vacancies in the finance section. I will highlight some of the financial figures reported in the audited financial statements. On slide 18, the total assets excluding ITB land but including the ITB office accommodation was $246.5 million. The total liabilities of the trust was $149.5 million. Net assets of the ITB was $97 million. It was an increase of 7.70% in the net assets. On page 19 of the slide, we focus on the statement of performance financial information, the revenue and expenditure. The total revenue of the trust, comprising of leases, royalties, servitudes, investment income, was $50.6 million. The total expenditure for the year 2010-2011 was $43.8 million. In terms of the cash flow statement on page 20, cash flows from operating activities was $40.5 million. Net cash flows from investing activities was $13.8 million. Cash and cash equivalents at year-end as of 31st of March 2011 was $185.6 million. I would like to focus on the Auditor General's report. The Auditor General had qualified us for 2 bases. The first one was a non-valuation of land, meaning the land holdings of ITB. The second issue that they qualified us on was on the incompleteness of royalty revenue. And under the section of emphasis of matter, there was a fruitless and wasteful expenditure with regard to the contribution that we made for the Zulu Mystery Project. Other than these 3 issues, there were no matters reported in the management letter. The management letter was clean, and in terms of performance information, the Auditor General did not find any issues with regard to that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable members, maybe the board would want to add or emphasize some things on the basis of elaborating so that you avoid the brevity distorting effect. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. I have no comment at this stage. I have nothing to add. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. According to what figures on the report by the member transport, they gave our assistance in interpretation and navigation in fencing. If one may ask, what form of assistance does the board give to community other than just advising them to comply with the regulations? To Chairperson, there is an issue of in the Ngoma Trust land that is under my force, if I may say. But only to find that when there's an info development in the area, it is said to be a state land board that are the Department of Development and Land Reform. In this case, Chairperson, we have an application by the Mulalas municipality where they identified the area of Ngosi and Zuza for a rural housing project. which in 2004, which up until today, nothing has happened in the area. And what role does the board play with regards to dealing with that? Because the area that I'm talking about is the area that is under Inkosi. On the issue of this administration committees, if one may find out, are these committees going to be members from the communities, or maybe they will be people who will be nominated or by the Moyon Transport, or who will be nominating them to give them the task of being administrators on the land of Moyon Transport. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me thank the presenter for presenting the report on the activities of the ITP for 2010-2011 financial year. But Chair, just a few questions for clarity. The first one is on the first page, on the number of applications that have been processed, because we're told about 1,220 applications and 449 that has been approved by the board, 211 signed. What about the other ones? If you can get a clarity on that one. Secondly, Chair, the report is silent about the staff establishment of the Ngwenyama Trust, so that you can have a picture of, according to the staff establishment, how many people are you supposed to have, how many posts were filled in the financial year, are there any vacancies? We just get one line from the chairperson, from the overview of the chairperson and also the CEO, but we need to get a picture of the staff establishment of the ITP. You know, when looking at your strike plan, you indicated to the committee that 90% of your income is utilized for the community benefit and 10% for the board expenses. But when looking at the report, it doesn't give me a clear picture where the 90% has been utilized for the benefit of the community. Can you also clarify that? Because it told us that 90% of the budget is being utilized for it. Community benefit. Chair, I've noted that most of the targets that were set by the ITP were not met, which is a major concern, although reasons were given, but you know, if more than 50% of the targets were not met, then the concern to us, because you're planning for these activities at the end of the day, we are expecting progress on some of the same activities. The issue of the inspectors. We are saying that we are failing to appoint the 10 inspectors. Can you give us the reason for the failure, and also what has happened to that budget, which was budgeted for the appointment of the 10 inspectors? Was it transferred to other programs, or was it rolled over to 2012 financial year? Then the issue of the land administrative committees again. How does those committees relate to other local committees that we have, such as the watch committees and also the other structures, the local council? And what are the reasons for not establishing this land administrative committee? Then the other one, the issue of the internal audit. When looking at the report, it seems as if you have outsourced your internal audit function. But when looking at other matters that have been raised by the Auditor General, especially the fruitless and the wasteful expenditure one, then you start to ask yourself, what did the audit committee advise the IEP, the ITP on this matter, and also what did the
And also, when initiating this project, did you budget it for it? If not, then where did you get to this half a million? Almost half a million. Where did you get that money to start this project? And also, what is the current status with regards to this project? Then the last one, in your report, you have said to share the offices with the provincial officials of the Department of Rural Development. Do you enter into any, did you enter into any agreement with regards to that? Then the last one is on the issue of this there's a certain amount of money that you have paid due to overdue debtors account. To me also this is a wasteful and fruitless expenditure. Can you get the reasons why are you delaying to pay the account on time? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, my colleague, Honorable Ngwenyamabila, has touched some of the aspects I would like to understand. But as she has said, it is really very sad if you set yourself target and then you don't meet the target. And you are being allocated a budget based on strategic plan, of which the targets are set form part of that strategic plan. In the number of transfers of land for domestic purposes, you set yourself a zero standard and didn't transfer not even a single one. The question now, the reason you have given is the Department of Public Works. Have you consulted it before you set yourself this target, the department? And then below that is the application process for the allocation of land for housing infrastructure. And then the reason you are dealing there is that there were incomplete documentation. Who is supposed to complete those documents? Because this reason, to me, it doesn't make sense. And then under the tenure application, you raise the capacity issue there for not meeting the target. The question is, what do you mean by saying there is a capacity issue? If you say the board lacks the capacity, what do you do about that? In priority areas, teams to be appointed and trained, which is very important to me. And then the reason you have given that is that the community lacks information. And then the question is, why does the community lack information? And what do you do about that? Because that reflects very bad to the board if the community can lack information. And then in the number, in the administration, land administration committees, you know, if you say the reason you're giving us not to meet it, not to achieve not even one of your targets, is you say it is because of some technicalities, that makes no sense to you. It has got no meaning to me. When you say so, what do you mean? Be specific. What technicalities you are referring to that cause you not to meet the targets? Specific, so because we need to know. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I have quite a few questions, but I'm not sure if you wanted them to answer the first one before I ask for what you have in statistics.
Just ask all your questions, like Ms. Motu, where you might be that you.
Thank you, Chief Informant. Thank you for the presentation. Chair, just something that was strange, maybe there's the answer for that, but in the document also, we speak about 236 traditional councils, and on the land. They say approximately. And I just wondered, because if we don't know how many traditional councils are we working with, do you have a list? Or and that would bring me to the next question, that says one of the aims of the Ingonyama Trust Board is to ensure that the communities and their lives are being impacted on positively. So if we don't know how many people or councils, traditional councils are we working with, so maybe I don't know. It's printed in the document as approximately. Why is it approximately? That is maybe one of the concerns and maybe why we are not moving. Chairperson, I mean, on the land audit, I spoke about it last time, and I also asked last time, what is the department's assistance in this regard? Is it somewhere where we are beginning to assist and ensure that we at least finalize the land audit on the Ingonyama Trust side, because there's a formalized structure that needs to assist there, or not? Or do we just leave it to the Ingonyama Trust Board to finalize the land audit? And what is the assistance from the department in this regard? Chairperson, and then the other questions that I'm having, there was on page 9 or something, somewhere in the beginning with the chairperson's report, or the CEO's report, they spoke about the departments and the meetings that they held with the departments to speak about the mandate of the Ingonyama Trust Board. Is the movement and the assistance of the department in this regard? I think this is also something that we discussed last time. What is the assistance that the department gives the Ingonyama Trust Board for development with regarding other departments in this thing? On page 9, Chairperson, in the document, it says there that in the Act, it says, however, no alienation or burdening of the land may occur without written permission. I'm not sure if this is only, I presume it's not for leases, it's if you want to sell or something else. Did you receive any requirements of people that asked for that or not? And if you did, how many did you receive? And just for interest sake, I saw the meetings that were set in place, but there's no mention of the king, if he's attending any of these meetings, and if it's not necessary to report if the king is attending the meetings or not. Chairperson, on page 16, the revenue. I have read somewhere else that it's regarding the Act, the KwaZulu-Natal Act, the revenue. How is it being used? If the revenue is coming from a certain community, is it being spent in that community? But also I've read that most of the money has not been spent, and if I can skip a few pages to page 53 in the report on unused provisions. If I read this report correctly, Chairperson, out of 111 million or almost 112 million that was put aside to be used in the communities, only 3 or almost 4 million was spent. And it's a concern to me because I think we discussed it last year also. Does the communities know what the money can be spent on, and do they know which channels to follow? And that brings me to my very first question, was approximately so many tribal authorities. If we don't know, then you know, I think we will never be able to come to a point where communities can actually know how to access the money. I won't speak about the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. I just want to ask a question on the Mineral Resources Act. It was in the report last year also that they were speaking to the department to try and establish what needs to happen to royalties. And it doesn't look like there's any movement. If I can just get a progress on that, what was the
page 31, the response by the board. On the auditor general's valuation and royalty revenue. But I must say I'm very concerned by the response. To say that the board doesn't really think that it's important to value the land. Chairperson, I know that there was a court case and I think it's still not finalized, and that's my question. How do you then deal with local municipalities with regards to payment of your money if you don't think it's important to value the land? And I also wonder if it's so difficult to value the land. If you have your pieces of land and you know what is the value of certain pieces, you can just start by doing a desktop valuation. I think we will discuss this thing every year if the board thinks it's not important. And I think we must... I just want to say to you, I think maybe I want to advise the board to discuss this in the meeting. What is the value of the land that you own? I think it's important that we know that. In total, the 2.8 million acres. What is the value if you would just have to give an amount? And the same on the royalty revenue, it's concerning that they say that they've done everything right, while the Auditor General said they couldn't find documents and there were things that not there. Chair, it brings a thing to mind that there could be fraud or corruption happening if one lot says this is happening and the person that needs to make sure that everything is in place is another thing. I'm just concerned about that section, Chair. And then on page 48, this change in property holdings. There was a column there. And I just wanted to understand when and why does the change happen? Is it when you transfer land in the name of municipalities? Or what is the reason why the change in property holdings is happening? And also the income of that. Where is it reflected? Chairperson, I think for now that is all that I wanted to ask.
Now, Tim, who's on the only one, on page 50 of the annual report, the depreciation in UK traffic cut from 13.7 in 2010-09 to 255.6. Was there an explanation on that?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'm going to invite Linda and Amin to give me two aspects of the reports. But I'll respond to those questions that are directed to the department.
Eradication and financial issue, where what other assistance was being provided other than that assistance. I think that this was part of an empowerment process to enable communities to be able to institute programs on their land that were of value to them and a way to encourage economic development on the land. And this was, however, I think at this stage that the goals needed to be kept simple at that stage. The idea is to create an organization that is simple, effective, and streamlined. And possibly this goal was a bit too optimistic in attempting to achieve something that it wasn't at the point where it could yet deliver on that target. In regards to the issue raised about the Ingonyama Trust land in Kosi Nzuza and the rural housing project that has been outstanding since 2004, in this regard, this particular case is not known to me personally, and I would prefer to be able to give a written response in what has happened with that particular matter. And this in Kosi Matava can assist off of his memory.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. I heard about it from the Kosi agenda, but I think the land needs to be transferred totally into the Ingonyama Trust. The land still in the hands of RSA. Thank you. The land still in the Republic of South Africa. Needs to be transferred to the IGB.
Regarding the allocation and the makeup of the Land Allocation Committee for the Land Administration Committee, the idea of the Land Administration Committee is the selection of individuals from the community who can collectively determine the use of the land for the optimal material, the optimal benefit of the land, as a checks and balances process. The idea with the Land Allocation Committee is also to offer the opportunity for the municipality to be involved in their forums in the planning, use and development of the land from the word go, as opposed to being merely a local authority that is reactive to a situation on the ground. So in this respect, there is a number of bilateral agreements and trilateral agreements and relationships that need to be solidified and worked out before one can merely institute that process. So we did undertake a trial run in the Ndebele and Mofumeni area. However, there's still some work that is required to ensure that what we do, there is no precedent to do this. We are the people that are formulating that precedent and able to undertake this project. And hence, as we're going along, we're learning and discovering new methodologies of being able to implement that. So it doesn't, we don't always get it right, but what we're hoping to do is to be able to have something that other people can then look to and say, this is how, this is a big practical situation, and this is how well it works. The number of applications received, and what about the difference between the number of applications received and the number of applications that eventually resulted in lease agreements or tenure agreements? A number of applications received, in a number of instances, the applications are incomplete. And one of the issues raised by another member, the honourable member, was regarding the need, for example, the consent of the traditional council. An application may be received that is missing a traditional council consent. That application has to be referred back in order for that step to be fulfilled. Because of the board's mandate to only allow for land tenure or encumbrances where it has that consent already in place. The second issue revolves around the aspects touched upon, for example, in the rural housing project, where not all the land has been transferred to the Ingonyama Trust Board. And it is improper to allocate rights to land, even if it be in the form of a lease, if you do not own that land. Yet, even if it is identified to come across to you, there has to be that percentage that cannot be formalized at this stage because the land ownership is not vested in title to the Ingonyama Trust Board. And then the third category of persons, obviously it's because of, one has to understand that a lease application requires a due diligence process, and in order to ensure that you've complied with the due diligence, may take a period of months, during which period you may cross financial years or miss board meetings, and hence the application can only be considered in the next financial year. So one might find the situation where next year you might find that you have 700 board approvals as a result of applications missing deadlines in terms of financial year. The question raised about the current status of the staff application. The current organogram indicates that during this the financial year under question, there was a vacancy of 7 positions, I believe it was. 7 positions, but I am subject to correction, so maybe I should just defer that question for now. The idea of the organogram of the Ingonyama Trust Board is to set out a secretariat which reports to the board to undertake the board's function, to undertake the effective administration of the board's mandate. And the secretariat comprises of an administrative component, which keeps the records, registry, provides support to the board. There is then the financial division, which reports on the financials, control budget, and does the assets, the property and assets component. And then there's the real estate leg, which is the major component. Currently, the real estate department has 19 people in its employment. These range from community officers and agricultural officers, land GPS coordinate surveyors, real estate officers, and GIS department, because all of our records are maintained through a geospatial mapping process to ensure due diligence and control and use of the land. In terms of the question raised regarding whether 90% of the land, 90% of the income is used for projects, the return is almost plowed back into communities in the form of projects and in the form of empowerment to the communities through projects. The question was raised as to whether there's not a clear picture of how and where this 90% is used. In this regard, I will defer this question to my CFO, as he may have a clearer understanding and be able to report more clearly on exactly how the disbursement of funds work. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam. Thank you, Chairperson. If you look at our financial statements on page 59 of our financial statements, you'll see that we make a provision of 90% of our income. 90% of income excluding transfer payments. We made a provision of 24 million rand to fund the accruing to traditional councils and beneficiaries. From the 24 million rand for 2010-2011, not the full 24 million rand was spent, but at least 4 million rand was spent from the 24 million rand. So a provision is made. What we do is we say the total income received from trading activities is a certain amount, 90% of that is provided and accrues for traditional councils. And when business plans are received, payments are made against that particular provision. And we have detailed schedules reflecting how much is accruing to a particular traditional council. Thank you.
In order to perhaps
I thought you had a little, you were still deploying. She said she finished, and then Mr. Mia was going to make a presentation. And I thought she finished. So, or you were deploying.
In relation to that particular question.
All right.
In order to give committee a broader understanding of the types of projects that one may find in a traditional council, one would understand, for example, in a particular TC, they would, on a yearly basis, put in applications for school clothes for children. So the application would be for us, for the funds to children, school-going children, show for that financial year from the proceeds of the traditional council income. Another particular program that is instituted by the Lungu TC is where they would, for example, advise us on a list of students they have granted bursaries to from within their community, and the funds would be released for the payment of those bursaries. The issue regarding the investors and the failure of this to achieve this. As mentioned previously, there was no precedent relied upon in order for us to be able to institute such a program. We were adjusting to the program as a way of trying to achieve a certain goal at the end of the day. And we were working towards the modernization and reformalization of traditional communities in order to achieve a certain goal. However, we will admit and we will acknowledge that, as mentioned previously, that perhaps this goal is not a goal that was as cohesively laid out as perhaps it should have been under the circumstances and as cohesively thought out. And for that, we will have to take acknowledgement of the flaw in that particular regard. On the issue of the internal audit function and why that function was proceeded outside, once again, this question will be fielded by the CFO.
Thank you. The internal audit function is indeed outsourced. The board took a decision some years ago to outsource this function. Remember, the capacity of ITB staff members at that time was only about 3. We then in 2009 moved up to 9 staff, and then we currently have about 30 staff. We will in the future consider employing people within the organization to take on this particular function. With regard to the wasteful expenditure, the audit committee expressed their concern, great concern regarding this matter. We recommended that the board investigate this matter thoroughly, and if legal steps are needed to be taken against the researcher, that would happen. If you notice in our report, we did make note in our response that we would take appropriate steps in order to make sure that the matter is thoroughly investigated and that the person is brought to book for the reason. Thank you.
I would also like to comment at that stage that the work itself was an attempt to look at the traditional land systems in line with the Constitution, and the return to us would have been a land administration system, an investigation on the cohesiveness between cultural, land ownership, land use and development was the result for the RTD. So we do not see that at the end of the day that the project would not have provided a certain level of commitment and understanding to the board in the understanding of the dynamics and the society within it which it operates. However, the board is definitely pursuing the matter and will not let the matter rest yet. The question was raised as to where, on the issue regarding the sharing of facilities with the department. I believe that the DG would be in the best position to advise.
Chairperson, on that question, indeed, when the board was established in 1998, the secretariat was only about 2 or 3 people who were in the establishment of the Department of Land Affairs. They were seconded to the board, so there was no need of creating a separate office or a service level agreement of sorts or a lease agreement between the board and the department. It was only the official government department seconded to the secretariat. I may just as well dispose of the 2 questions from Honourable Stain regarding the assistance provided by the department to the board with regard to the audit, state land audit. There is a far more better working relationship between the department and the board now. Honourable Member Stain, you will recall that previously the board reported that there was lack of cooperation from the department, there wasn't information submitted as was required. That situation has changed, as you will see. When they reported, they said additional 45 properties have been transferred to the board. That reflects the kind of relationship to expedite the completion of the asset register of the board. I may just as well add that the board is far, far more advanced than other parts of the country in terms of completing the specific asset register. There's something that we can learn from the West as well.
I would like to now hand over to the CFO to respond to the question regarding money paid for overdue debtors accounts and the delay in paying the accounts on time.
Thank you. Chairperson and committee members, we have not paid any overdue, any creditors late. The figure reflected in the financial statement means that people that haven't paid us on time, we have charged them interest. So that's the interest on overdue accounts. It's not that we've paid late. It's people that have paid us late.
Thank you. I would now like to deal with the charges relating to the underachievement insofar as the state domestic facility, the transfer of the state domestic facility is concerned. In terms of the Amendment Act, the state domestic facility vested. The land that was identified as the state domestic facility prior to 1994 was to be vested in the organ of state. The transfer is merely a process to acknowledge that vesting, very similar to the way the transfer of the land to the Intermountain Trust Board from the state is an acknowledgement of that vesting that had occurred and it's the physical evidence of that act of Parliament or other act of legislation. The idea regarding that particular portfolio was to create separate title and transfer those to the relevant authority in this regard. And there had been negotiations with Public Works in order to ensure that they would then receive these title deeds for their facility as part of their ongoing management and their assets register. However, in terms of the implication of legislation such as NEMA, such as NEMA, the National Environmental Management Act, such as the incoming of the Provincial Development Planning Development Act, what we have is a unique situation where you have the creation of farms, huge farms comprising of a number of component portions with a state domestic facility occupying 4 or 5 hectares thereon. And the process of creating that separate title and transferring same to the organ of state is a process that requires quite complex conveyancing and land understanding. And in that regard, as I mentioned previously, I believe it was the case that the target was a bit optimistic in that the processes involved in that and the cost related thereto in order to achieve this was of concern. The idea to address the process in the interim was to come up with a formulation to say to the department, we will give you some sort of tenural documentation to prove that it is yours in order that you may deal with the land effectively as an interim process whilst these transfers occur. The question regarding whether the documentation was incomplete insofar as applications are concerned, once again, this refers to instances where the documentation submitted to the board from the developer or the local municipality was incomplete in order for the board to completely assess in the contract or the negotiation that was entering into in that regard. And one of the documents that was frequently missing was the settlement plan, which is a requirement of the Department of Human Settlements. Another document which was often missing was the traditional council's consent. In both those cases, an application could not be processed for until those documents had been supplied. Another first document that was also required was proof of funding from the Department of Human Settlements. All those documentations would prove to the board as a submission before it that it applied its mind and that a program has been instituted over its land holding. It has the buy-in from the community, has the those matters were referred back for further matters, and in a number of cases that documentation was supplied, however, it was supplied too late to be able to achieve the goals and the targets for that particular financial year. We note your concern regarding the issue that if a community lacks information, it is a clear reflection on the board, and in this regard we accept and we note your concern, and we will definitely be taking that under definite deliberation and consideration. And regarding the questions regarding the technicalities of the land allocation committee, I do feel that perhaps I answered this question ad infinitum previously, but yes, the technicalities involved in such an arrangement require the fact that there is no precedent to determine this, and we are setting breaking ground in this regard and setting up formulations, and we are treading on this process with a number of role players, and as such, sometimes it would be better to have a streamlined and effective process rather than create a process merely to create for the purposes of having a bureaucratic process at hand. I shall now proceed to deal with the Member Sane, Honourable Member Sane's questions. The 236 traditional councils on the land, in this regard, once again, with your permission, I'd like to delegate upwards to the Honourable Nkosi Matawa to provide absolute clarity. I will try my best to formulate a response, but I think that the Nkosi, as the provincial, one of the provincial members of the House, is in the best position to respond to that question.
Thank you, Chairperson. To be precise, we have got 241 Amakosi.
I believe that the Director General kindly responded to the question, the next question. Then I will deal with the questions regarding no alienation burdening without that has been received. The current status of the board, as mentioned previously, is that unless we have received the traditional council's consent, no alienation or burdening will occur of that type. This is insofar as it may relate to the servitude, may it relate in the rare occasion to a sale, or may it relate to even a lease agreement. If an individual applies for a lease at a residential site, a business site, a shopping centre, whatever that application may be, there has to be accompanying that application confirmation from the traditional council on an official traditional council letterhead with the stamp of the traditional council and signed by no less than three members indicating that it approves of such an application for that land. Whether His Majesty the King had attended any of the meetings at the time. Regrettably, His Majesty did not attend on any of our meetings. However, he is informed of all the meetings and the outcomes of the meetings. Minutes are supplied to his office, and any questions or issues are raised through his deputy or the acting chair. Your questions, Honourable Member, related to the page 16 on the revenue and how the money has been used and why it has not been spent, and you indicated 112 million rand. In this case, I will ask the financial officer to respond to those queries.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable Singh is correct in that regard. On page 53 under provisions, note 29, the board accumulated 108 million for this. There's 108 million accruing to traditional councils, 111 million for 2010-2011, we spent 3.7 million.
That's not an answer.
clarity on all these questions.
The report says that the 132 was 237,000 set aside, of which 111.87 came from financial year 2009-2010, and only 3.7 million was spent. That's not a complete question, isn't it? So if you were to say you have kept the money in reserve,
right,
you only spend the state for you, can you explain why? What is the issue? Remember, your documents, all of them, indicate that the purpose of the ITP is the empowerment of communities. So when you keep money there, when it's meant to go to the community, you need to explain, there must be a strategic reason why you're keeping the money instead of making it flow to the community.
Chairperson of the honourable members, at this point in time, we are in a court case with the Kekumene municipality with regards to the lakes issue. It is important that the Nyama Trust Board, I'm not saying withholds, but keeps in reserves the monies that could be paid, or if the decision of the court is negative against us, is against us, then we would have these monies available for the payment of rates. Beyond that, Chairperson, we could get a written response from the board as to that.
This is a fundamental issue, and I think you should come in. The objective of this board, when it was created, is to provide empowerment to these communities via real estate and land management. All other purposes are beyond the scope of the objective of the trust. Now, if the board is keeping reserves instead of empowering communities, you remember, the board is a legal entity created by the state and therefore subject to transfer. So to spend money on communities is not wasting money. When a court says the board must pay rates, that is an arrangement between yourselves and them. It's not the arrangement between the board and the communities. I think, really seriously, the board is doing the communities a disservice by keeping money in the bank instead of spending the money on the communities, irrespective of whether the court case or not. Remember, this money is growing. The previous year it was 11.87. The next year is 132.637. So next year it could be 150 something. That 150 million could be spent to improve the conditions of lives of people, especially because your targets are not met. So I find it completely strange to use the court case as a reason not to spend money in communities.
Thank you, Chairperson. I take note of the comments of the Chairperson. It is indeed a matter that we need to deliberate, to discuss with the board. I must hasten to just say that this was a board decision without involving or contracting the department. So we will take it up definitely with the board. Yes.
I find it strange that what the general didn't find it amiss. The board did this. I find it odd. Because only the general should have looked at it and say it's something that is beyond the scope of the board. But let's move on. I think we need to deal with this matter in a much more urgent way. Thank you.
Thank you for your guidance in this regard. The mineral resources legislation. The mineral resources legislation requires us to be a little bit more firm, we believe. There needs to be a bit more of an
assumption that that money is due to us, it is due to the communities from whose land has been utilized for these operations, and approaches will definitely be much more on a stronger basis, on a more, more streamlined and more impact basis to ensure that this this matter is resolved amicably between the departments, and we would definitely be seeking the assistance and backup of the department to facilitate us with it.
If I may add, Acting Chair, Honourable Acting Chair. What Belinda is saying is that when a community, when a developer comes into an area and say, I need 500 hectares of your land or 1,000 hectares of your land for purposes of mining or this kind of development, what it means is that that community is deprived of the use of that land for the duration of that activity in that area. And therefore, whatever revenue is derived from the activity of that commercial development in this area must therefore accrue to those who lost use of their land. So this is where the board has had to make a decision to say, we can't generate this money here and go and disperse it there. It would be interesting to ask the Bafokeng to say, you are generating so much money from platinum, why don't you give it to all the traditional communities in the in Northwest? I don't think they would agree. So this is the kind of dilemma that the board has got to deal with.
Honourable Member, the issue regarding the non-valuation of the land, I would hasten to submit to the members that the board does not consider this matter lightly. The valuation of the land is a very important issue to the board. However, one needs to consider a number of factors in this regard. The most important being, what is the basis of the valuation of our land and for what would the purpose of that valuation be? Is it necessary to have a valuation of 2.7, a market-related valuation with all the infrastructure contained thereon, for 2.7 million hectares of land, when only certain components of that land will be utilized or developed at a certain point in time, and at which point is it not then more appropriate to value an item during the use and for the best and highest use for which it is being used at that current point? Project, remembering that a value is outdated within 6 months of it being instituted. So to value land purely for the sake of announcing growth, when one has the ability and the resources are available for a quick reference to be made to municipal valuation role of those lands as a result of having wall-to-wall valuations, so that information and the ability to be able to access that information, there is some form of value attached to the land. However, it is the belief and understanding of the board that to expend money to determine a market-related value when there is not a purpose for which that would be used effectively would result in an issue where you are incurring expenses and not achieving the goal that you wish to achieve at that time. It is far better to say, an area, for example, like Jassini, where economic opportunity has exploded in a completely different way and the land use has completely changed within the period of 2 to 3 years, to say that is an area where we need to attach value and to determine value because we are dealing in a climate of commercial change in that particular environment and to deal with that more effectively. The use of the valuation of the land is for a specific purpose. There is not to say that we do not believe that non-valuation is an issue, is not needed. Valuation is definitely, to know the worth is there, but there are resources available to determine the worth within a different context, and not necessarily for us to have appointed valuers to assess valuation on that. And to give you an example of the kind of concept of what one would undertake, a valuation of a piece of land at 1,200 hectares for best and highest use from a professional independent valuer would cost in the region of 300,000 rand. And as I said, within 6 months, that particular value would be outdated.
300 million.
But then Ms. Benson is saying, without saying so, that when you don't do this function, remember this is the legal requirement.
Mm.
As a real estate agent of the state, this is the, one of the responsibilities you ought, because your role is real estate and land management. So what you actually not say in your answer is that this responsibility must be done by another agency, because it must be done. Even if it's for different purposes, like you say, but it must be done. And if it is not done by yourselves, some other agency must do it. Because if you want to avoid this the general qualification, that function must be performed. Even if it's going to be done by municipalities, but it must be performed.
Yeah, absolutely correct, Chairperson. I remember that there's been some municipalities who have submitted invoices to the department and the Iwanyama Trust for aid. But you would recall that it is a prerequisite that they must first have an evaluation role on the basis of which they then bill or determine the amount of rates payable in a particular area. And in instances where they fail to do so, there's no basis on which they can demand the board to pay. In the case of HFB, they determined they had a role on the basis of it. So it is the primary responsibility of the local authority.
I believe at this stage we only have three more questions.
Go ahead.
Then I believe the final question is a question for my CFO on page 50 of the annual report. You required, Honourable Member, you required certain explanations regarding page 50 of the annual report. In this case, I'll ask the CFO to deal with it.
Thank you, Chairperson. The board in 2010-2011 moved to its own premises and expanded its activities. Therefore, the infrastructure assets, including sort of motor vehicles, were purchased. The increase in the depreciation, seen on page 50, the schedule there, it explains that depreciation increased from 2009-2010 because of the acquisition of these assets, and that depreciation was for that particular year.
Honourable members, we normally have an unending sessions of questions because of follow-ups and things. I don't know whether you are satisfied with the answers received. Because I'm Bungayako, and this is all Negamo, because Bungayako was young. No, of course, Dum Kulu, or Mandelin Komo. I didn't make a gang.
Yeah,
it goes.
about food security. You have mentioned three places.
It's covered under the general not meeting of targets, so we'll cover that.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's something that I didn't ask, but I think it's important just understanding financial statements. On page 59 and page 61, I see the one as a trust fund, and the other one says consolidated legal statement. But if you look at the revenue, it's exactly the same, but the expenditure is different. Is the revenue the same revenue, or is it two different accounts? Chair, I think it's important that we understand this financial statement. And then just as a follow-up on the answers on the leases, I was just interested knowing that we have certain, I don't know how to call it, but cultural ways of living under communal land. In the lease agreement, if we could get in future detailed descriptions of how many of that leases is for women and how many is for men.
Chairperson, I'll respond to the Honourable Steen's question regarding the financial statement. I would request the members to look at page 49 of the annual report. Page 59 refers to the income statement, what we call an income statement, or the new terminology used, the detailed statement of performance. On 59, this reflects the expenditure and income of ITB own funds. When I say ITB own funds, I mean that income generated by the ITB from trading activities. On page 60 is the revenue or the transfer payment that we received from the department and the expenditure that we incurred. On page 61, what we've done here is we've consolidated the two. The result is a consolidated.
I believe at this stage we have to satisfy Gosiam with the number N and D, if we look here and D, we're going to have a check, detail. I think we need to agree, did you, that because the Igonyama wants to be everything to everybody, we have to try Gosiam to narrow the scope to focus on the core business of Igonyama Trust, real estate, land management. I'm sounding like a cracked record, but it is correct. Using real estate and land management and power communities. So this must then reflect in its activities. Everything that it does, real estate, land management, should be towards empowered communities. In that regard, then, the strategic plan has to reflect that. The APP should reflect that. The activities, programs that the APP should reflect that. And therefore, setting optimistic targets of the functions should relate to that. And therefore, if you do not have a plan, which is the APP in this case, you may not be able to know and understand your own capacity in order to reach that. So it is an important matter that there should be a correlation between your estate, real estate activities, land management activities in relation to that. So that brings us to the second issue, the land use plan. You can't do land management unless you have a land use plan. So your land use plan should relate to, like you said now, Josini is a commercial, undergoing a commercial boom now. So you do land use management plan in Josini to reflect the type of activities that will take place there. Same applies to agriculture. You say, where are the areas where agriculture will talking about gardens. We're talking about agriculture to feed the people. 4.5 million people in that area. It has to be, and clearly, Kosmata, very clearly that the ITB as a whole cannot do this function. By the way, it is not the function of the ITB to do rural development. It is the function of the ITB to do real estate and land management and use other joint venture partners to do rural development using your money as seed money. If you don't do that, your strategy is off. You are not going to achieve any of your targets. Including those people you want to employ, you go to communities, they can be employed by the municipalities in relation to in working relationship together. Take the example of public works. There's so many pockets of land that must be transferred. Public works is not doing this work, it's slow. And it gives an impression that when you set the target, you did not plan together with public works. Whereas if your total plan tells you that for this to happen, we need that partner. For this to happen, we need that partner. Then your total plan will tell you what capacity do you need to have inside the organization, as opposed to working relationship with all your partners. Last year, we asked the question, and DG didn't come back to give us the answer. If the IDP wants to do all the things it wants to do, what is its relationship with local authorities and other, you remember, joint venture partners? Like we know, rural development works in conjunction with other partners. What is it in the ITP that makes it to stand alone and not work with other partners and use its money as a seed to stimulate activity by other partners, both the private sector and public sector? Because, you see, if you leave your core function and do other functions of other partners, then you are missing your point because it's a function shift. You shouldn't. You should ask other partners to do this. Even if you pay for it, like the municipalities, for instance, they value your land. You don't have to pay for the valuation of the land, but you can pay the rent at a negotiated arrangement. Do you know that you do others get exemption to pay rent or delay in paying rent? Do you know that? Private sector applies to respond and say, we will build this big venture here, but we are applying reduced rates for electricity, reduced rates for water, and delay rates for the land. Do you know that they do? Did you? It happens. It depends on your relationship with these agencies. I'm of course can help you back up there, like the farmers do. I know that it happens with the farmers. Why can't it happen with you? Yeah, she is a spirit, she's the wife of a farmer. She was farming for the rest of her life until she became a politician. She's still a farmer. And a qualified nurse. Employment or budgeting. This plan will tell you where your budget goes. And your priority in your budget should not be the comfort of the offices. It should be the communities. 90% of your budget you set yourself, but you're not doing so. We're not requiring 90%. You said so. It's you who said that 90% of your budget. So you change your budget to focus on communities. Then the issue about employment equity. There is no negotiation about this. It's the law of the land. We said last year, your chair is the judge. And the judge takes the strategic plan, APP, minutes, and goes to the new game, the great place, and say, Makos, I'm here to report. The judge of the High Court. What is the reporting if it's not saying on the basis of what you tell us to do, these communities are going to benefit this way, that way, that way. So employment equity has to be complied with by as the law of the land. Women, young people, remember your inspectors should be young people. Remember your outreach could be done by young people and women. Disabled people could be in offices. You can do it. Even in the board, you should have disabled people then. Yes, you have.
Yeah.
That's fine. Employment equity is the law of the land. If you employ out of your 19 people, young people to do real estate, tomorrow there can be land surveyors, there can be other things in relation to real estate, even what they call estate agents and developers. They can be. No. If you employ them there, the next issue is tenure rights. Now, this is another core business. Tenure rights. When you come back to us next year, you have to show the rights that you have awarded to various applicants. They have to be biased in favor of those rural people. Remember that in this country, the economy of this country was started around land. It was mining, it was agriculture, thereafter, industry. And of course, then the townships and towns. Land is the source of the economy. So if your tenure rights are not biased in favor of those people, you stop calling them traditional communities. They are communities on that land. Isn't it that good? So you bias your tenure applications in favor of those people, because that's empowerment. When I have a title deed in my hand, whether it's long-term lease or freehold, I am empowered to make a business or an activity that will feed my family on the land. That is why PDO for traditional leaders is discriminatory if it is freehold for other communities. I'm not suggesting you change PDO. I'm saying let them use the land in a sustainable way by having some secure rights in their hands. I saw it in the list of rights you give. No PDO anymore. It's called an indigenous. What is it called? No, I saw it in the thing. That indigenous title. Manda. Indigenous title. The last issue relates to the conditions matter that we dealt with. Don't put money away. In fact, this whole idea of reserve when you are not meeting your target is a misnomer. Let me tell you, when the state created the board, it had a different intention to what is happening now. If you remember, it was a political decision then, but now the law has recognized that in all provinces there will be land management, one land rights management boards in the rest of the country. So this institution should be a copycat, or shall I say, the original way of doing things when we'll create the rest in the country. And therefore, what they do, they should do right in favor of those communities on whose behalf they hold land. That is why it is an important matter that we see. You know, there's a quite a song. What is the one about the Warner Center? It's by the group called TKC. What is the one about the Warner Center? Who passes the joy as law? What is the wrong about the Warner Center? ITV can stand up in the podium and say, what is the wrong about the Warner Center? Because they have created something that nobody intended originally, which has now been recognized by the state to be duplicated across the country. Land Rights Management Board. And if you don't do that, you are actually robbing those people of something as this morning for the rest of the country. And this is the summary, we can deal with the details, the technical, when you into the internal audit, but this is the core business of the institution. Remember, we still have two items on the agenda. There's the agenda for lunch and come back here to deal with those two other items. The thing for me that we agreed last week that is not what we are going to do today. Remember, the annual report has to be finalized by and tabled by Friday. So if we don't finish the whole work today, we're not going to be able to meet the target. We're going to, this target was not set by us, it was set by the House. You don't know that? We agreed last week this is what we're going to do. We said, oh, we like what we did on the annual report of the department, let's do this to the rest and finish. And we have no other business in the afternoon. We do not have the House sitting. So there's no point in not doing the work. The abuse of the speaker will come back. Is that the Musa? Musa. Musa.
Honourable members, I'm told that the chairperson has already summarised what needs to be done by Mwenyama Trust together with the assistance of the department and also how best can the department assist. Then I think on that part we are done. Can we have just a 10 minutes? Okay, I think we'll release the department with the ITP, then as members will come back at 2 o'clock so that we continue with our business, our commercial business. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Acting Chair. Gender breakdown, but you may also want to just say this type of commercialist type of business like so, you can then say gender, and the thing is that
Thank you. Yeah.